Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Marcus Quam from Webster, South Dakota, back on the show. Marcus is a full-time fishing guide down in eastern South Dakota. The name of his business is Real Therapy Guide Service. You'll find that on social media. This guy's a wealth of information, a very passionate angler. It's always a good time to have him on the podcast. So let's get to it here. We've got Marcus Quam on the JMO Podcast.
We're all looking to have the ultimate edge on the water, but how do we get there? When it comes to fishing rods, JT Outdoor Products has you covered. Their technique-specific rods are engineered and tested by tournament professionals to give you the competitive advantage on the tournament trail or the extra edge to the passionate everyday angler. They're hand-built in Farmington, Minnesota. With the highest grade carbon fiber blanks and the finest componentry, JT rods are ultra lightweight, incredibly sensitive, and built for performance. Whether you're after walleye, bass, pike, or panfish, they have every species covered. Their rods deliver precision, durability, and unmatched feel. Don't settle for ordinary. Fish smarter with JT Outdoor Products, where performance meets perfection. Visit them at jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Do yourself a favor, check them out today. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO Podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. If you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglaciallakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description of this podcast. Roll with it, starting with, a little bit of an update or kind of a reflection on wrapping up the ice season. Go ahead.
So we had a more normal winter than we've had the last couple of years. We got about 60 days into guiding here. We start right after Christmas, so we finished here the first week of we got 1 week of marching with the snow bears, but we did have some fluctuating temps, so we didn't get as much ice as which some of the ice belt did. I would say we might have had 24 inches as a max right around the Webster area here, but you didn't have to travel too far south where 17, 19 inches of ice is kind of the top end. So we finished up, right here around Webster on the Big Lakes on Wabe and Bitter. The shorelines are getting soft. And now we are looking forward to springtime walleye fishing. I think I'm going to have my boat out here in the next day or two probably on some maybe smaller, sneakier stuff without using boat accesses and different things like that. But I would say within a week or week and a half, we're gonna definitely have some accesses and some bigger lakes open up in our area.
It's cool to be talking about getting a boat out, on some of these named lakes and getting into it right away. I'm curious, maybe, general conversation, big picture, like give me a little bit of the standard rundown of kind of how the spring typically goes.
Well, a lot of our lakes are shallower, so they warm up pretty quick, so our fish are really conducive to pitching right away. And we got a lot of mud, sloughy kind of stuff, so you're looking for more of those bays and different things that warm up fast, and they do. Our water temperatures will creep up pretty quick on calm sunny days. So we're typically, pitching jig minnow, jig plastic, and then not too far off, we're, fishing jerk baits or some crank baits. But our fishing for me, I'm right in Webster here, and I don't have to go too far south to where it's kind of a different world. Like some of the lakes an hour south of me, a couple days ago before this last cold snap, were 75 to 90% open already. So typically for me, we're traveling just a little way south, and then we can kind of follow, the water temps or the spawn, and kind of you can get away from the spawn and you can be on pre-spawn or you can go to post-spawn within an hour, hour and a half of fishing one way or the other from town here. It doesn't take a lot of miles in area, and I don't know if it's something with a little bit of an elevation change or just our our geography on where we're at here, but it is cool to have that. I mean, yeah, we have plenty of options, and it is kind of fun because I know even when we're iced up here, I don't have to go too far south with this nice weather, and I'm going to be putting a boat in.
Yeah. So what ends up being kind of the main deal? Like the process of, say, you know, like those ice out walleyes, you know, where you get, you know, you talk about it being conducive to pitching and all that. I kind of want to expand on that and just sort of get more of a what it would look like on a given day of fishing for you. Say you're getting out, you know, you got an open mind. You're not going off of any previous, you know, day's fishing information. You know, I want this to kind of come off genuine, like how you would typically look for fish and just sort of how you would move and groove on the water.
Well, I'm actually in my garage right now getting stuff ready, and I've just got a couple things that I'm getting set up for it. Obviously when these fish are just coming off ice off, I'm going to have a jig and a minnow ready. I'm going to have a presentation that's pretty subtle that, you know, maybe they're in a little bit of a mood or a little funky that I need, but I'm going to also have a plastic ready, mostly something with like a straight tail, you know, nothing that is going to put off a ton of action, but there are days where it might be a tad colder than others where you don't want to dip in the minnow bucket every other cast neither. And then I will have a jerk bait ready. I love fishing jerk baits. When I go to look for my fish, obviously our fish in the Dakotas are very wind driven. So depending on the day, I'm going to pick maybe something that might have a little bit of wind, not directly on it, but something blowing on it. And, I'm going to be looking for something like a smaller piece of structure, a smaller bay, some little points or turns, but I'm definitely going to want to be near rock, but not necessarily on it. But those fish are going to be moving and transitioning to that. So maybe I'll be kind of more sort of next to some sand or mud transitions with some rock. But with our electronics today too, I mean, it pays to drive around and just do a little driving and looking. And I'm not even talking about like forward facing sonar or anything, just your side imaging with your transitions. And then maybe you're going to see a couple degree difference over here versus there. And that makes a big difference. I mean, watching the water temp is something that I don't hear a lot of guys talk about, but it's a big thing this time of year.
You know, what seems to be the biggest challenge in these things? You know, oftentimes spring walleye fishing comes off almost too easy, you know, or at least the process to doing it is sort of like, it's simple because there's maybe like sort of like one pattern that we're kind of looking for. And by the end of the day, a lot of people might find it, but it kind of comes off almost too easy. But what tend to be the challenges of spring walleyes? That might be something that, that we could dig into a little bit, you know, as far as, or, you know, whatever comes to your mind, whether it's inclement weather swings or something like that, or, you know, what tends to be the recipe for a tough day more often than not? And what could be some things that we could dig into there?
You know, right away, the toughest thing for me is too much wind, maybe, where it's kind of stirring up that water and not helping warm up. Like this first week or so, maybe even two that I'm going to go out and fish, I'm not even going to go in the morning. I typically wait till the sun's up and high and that water starts to turn and, get a little bit warmer. The fish are there, but they're not ready to move or do their thing. You know, they might be before the spawn and they're just sitting there and kind of just waiting, you know, a couple degree temperature. Let's see, some other challenges I think that come in the spring is a lot of times early right away, those fish are spread out too. I'm not talking like within a week or two, but like this first ice off, like these fish might be transitioning out of their deeper stuff or maybe some of the flats that you're catching them on late ice and they haven't quite congregated yet. So I would say there are times where these fish are spread out a little bit more. And it takes a little bit more moving and fishing than just kind of sitting in a spot.
Yeah. Yeah, that in itself is kind of something that I always enjoy talking about when we're talking walleye fishing. This can be year round, but like the spots,
versus areas conversation. Yep. Even when these fish start to school up, or when you do see wolf packs of them, which is can be a year-round thing, but like when you're running into wolf packs and you're running in, you know, how often do you, you know, you're a guy, you got a Rolodex of waypoints, you know, just in your mind, but much less on your graph. Like you probably have a milk run on any given lake that you've ever been on, you know, milk run of waypoints that you can go check that would just be high percentage spots. But if you were just combing through, you know, a mile stretch of shoreline that was good, you know, something brand new, and you're just trying to pioneer it, like how often in the spring do you feel like the recipe of the day allows you to kind of spot lock and make a particular cast on a spot versus having to have more of a area fishing mentality?
I would say the earlier it is, the harder it is to have one of those spot lock areas until stuff starts to change and get a little bit warmer. But I would say at the right time of the day, then you get more of a spot than an area. And that seems to be when the water's peaked at its warmest part of the day, which is typically in the afternoon, you know, like 3-4 o'clock, maybe 5 o'clock. And then till dark, that area turns more into a spot. And those fish are generally moving more.
Like how often does moving water play a factor in the spots or on the lakes that you typically fish in the spring?
If it has it, it's a big deal. A lot of our lakes don't have that. A lot of them are just, you know, little puddles and bowls where we don't have creeks or arms or fingers running into them or channels. But if it does have that, it is a key spot or area to definitely be checking. We have a few lakes with them, and yeah, they're notorious springtime areas that a guy definitely needs to take a peek at and fish.
Yeah.
I know that narrows a lake down pretty dang quick, which is good, but there's only a handful that I can think of off the top of my head that we have something like that.
Like, what's the best way to sort of describe, you know, wind? If we were to look at it as like a big blow, what do you do during a big blow? What do you do during, or what you consider to maybe be like the more ideal puff of wind? And then, you know, what's kind of your flat calm protocol? Like, and maybe I'm putting too much pressure on those things, but I'm just sort of curious what would come to mind for you if we sort of described, you know, that, you know, the spring winds in that way.
Well, if I just kind of shooting off the hip here with like a big blow, it's hard to fish that side of the lake, right? Like, cause you're typically throwing something light, you know, an 1/8 ounce, maybe a 1/4 ounce jig. And I like throwing my stuff on mono. So it is tough to fish on that, but that water's churning up so much that it's the warm water on top's churning with the cool water. So it kind of plays those spots out, in my opinion, anyways. So on a big blow, I would try to find like a corner or something next to a shallow spot or a bay or something where that warm water would be blowing out and kind of funneling around and hitting that shoreline. I mean, a spot like that's dynamite. You don't want to be on the calm side necessarily because that top layer of water that's warm is blowing off of that piece of structure too, which will kind of shut it down. So you almost want to be like on a side of it where that warm water is still continuing to get pushed down, but still hitting it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I love that.
I've been kind of in some situations where I've had fish on a calm side of the lake, and I was like, well, we're still going to be able to fish that today. And you pull up there, and the water's 2 degrees cooler, which wouldn't make a lot of sense, but you think about it, and that wind just pushed that warm water off that side of the lake.
Yeah.
And just churned it all up into the middle, you know what I mean?
Dude, that makes a ton of sense. I love that description. Well, what would you describe as being a more prototypical, like perfect condition? Like if you're looking at an extended forecast and you see these, you know, XYZ conditions in the 5 to 7 day forecast, you put a circle on the calendar, like that's a day that, you know, I gotta be out there.
Just a level or warming trend with light variable winds would be the ideal situation. I mean, then those fish are just going to set up where they want to set up on the structure or shoreline they want to be on. And then all you got to do is go find them and catch them. That would be an ideal situation. The worst conditions would be a cooling trend and wind. You can't catch them on the couch either.
Right.
So, if that's what you got and you want to go fishing, you still got to try it. And there are going to be, you know, over the years of fishing, no matter what, somebody's going to catch them somewhere at some time.
Yeah. And when it's flat calm, does that cause any challenges? You know, I mean, I'm kind of curious when I think of flat calm, you know, like any time of year, but, you know, more recently, wherever we go in the Midwest, you know, there's a lot of clear water. Like, we haven't had these big winters with deep snow. Like in recent history, we haven't had a bunch of them where everybody's getting runoff and dirty spring water, you know, so clear water and, you know, fish to different degrees are kind of boat spooky in a lot of different scenarios. Like when it's flat calm, it's kind of hard to get close to fish and all that. Like, I'm curious about that discussion with you when it comes to, you know, those flat calm days. Not that we get a lot of them, but if and when it happens, like, are there some things that sort of jump out at you as like, you know, well, today's going to be flat calm, we're going to have to do this?
The only thing that a guy can do is try to cast further, or those fish will maybe bump off to that next level. Instead of being in 2 to 5 foot, they might be in that 5 to 10 foot range. So you just kind of fish that next ledge. Because if it's that calm and they're that, you know, the walleyes don't want to be up where they can be seen neither necessarily. And sometimes you have to bump off that next level, but, you know, using your electronics, not necessarily forward-facing sonar, but side imaging and that kind of stuff will show you if you need to be up there. But instead of making 30, 40, 50-foot casts, maybe you need to be making 50, 60, 70-foot casts. You know, yeah. Just get further away from the boat. I talked about it earlier. I like mono, and, you know, obviously doing fluorocarbon leaders is a key thing anymore with the cleaner, clearer water. Just trying to mask your presentation a little bit that way.
We're all looking to have the ultimate edge on the water, but how do we get there? When it comes to fishing rods, JT Outdoor Products has you covered. Their technique-specific rods are engineered and tested by tournament professionals to give you the competitive advantage on the tournament trail or the extra edge to the passionate everyday angler. They're hand-built in Farmington, Minnesota. With the highest grade carbon fiber blanks and the finest componentry, JT rods are ultra lightweight, incredibly sensitive, and built for performance. Whether you're after walleye, bass, pike, or panfish, they have every species covered. Their rods deliver precision, durability, and unmatched feel. Don't settle for ordinary. Fish smarter with JT Outdoor Products, where performance meets perfection. Visit them at jtodp.com. That link is in the description of this podcast. Do yourself a favor, check them out today. The fishing opportunities in Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region are phenomenal. You've heard us talk about it on the JMO podcast before. It's a multi-species destination. We're not just talking walleyes or perch in the wintertime. There's phenomenal pan fishing. There's a fantastic bass fishing. There's muskies and big northern pike. Everything's there with hundreds of lakes and a bunch of communities that offer all kinds of fun events and lodging. If you want to plan your next fishing adventure, consider Northeast South Dakota's Glacial Lakes region. Head to sdglaciallakes.com for all that great information. The link is in the description of this podcast. Do you have any preferences on line size, jig size? Like, if we were to get gear, geek out a little bit on the gear talk here right away, you know, do you have any like particular preferences with color in the spring, or, you know, cadences, kind of like the whole presentation and gear talk conversation?
Well, for my mono, I like 6 pound Suffix Advance. I feel like they could have made a better mono. It's still got stretch, but not too much like the old stuff. And I'm in love with that stuff. And I think it's super tough and durable. 6 pound, I feel really confident with that, with any size of fish I'm catching, you know, from an eating variety to a big one. And I prefer like a Suffix Revolve if I'm using a parade. I know that was new last year, maybe. I tend to use 8 pound on my jigs for that. And then I'll typically run like an 8 or 10 pound fluorocarbon leader. I try to run like a 7 foot, 8 foot leader, nothing too long, but I don't like reeling up my leader into my reel to cast personally. So I'll kind of stick with like that 7, 8 foot leader if I can get by with it. The jig color, I don't get too crazy about that. Honestly, I don't. I feel like it's just getting it right in front of a fish's face. I mean, if it's dirty water, sunny day, I'll pick a bright color. If it's dark, I'll pick a dark color. But I've seen it where a plain lead colored jig is just as good as anything else anybody throws.
Would you say, I'm sort of curious how you come to your conclusions. Like, I feel like maybe the backstory on people's preferences is probably more interesting. The 6 pound mono. Are you a type of guy that, you know, and I'm just sort of hoping maybe there's some fishing stories to kind of go along with this, but like, are you the type of guy that is trying to get away with, you know, the biggest possible line that can still get, you know, the most bites, or are you intentionally being finessey? Like, you consider yourself a finesse fisherman? I'm sort of curious how you would describe that in terms of how that kind of dictates your decision making, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, so I wouldn't say I'm a super finesse guy. I've ran 8 pound and had good success with that. I don't think my catch rate's been any different, but I just noticed my casting distance being a lot better with 6 pound than I do 8 pound. And that's a big thing for me, is getting that bait as far as I can. And half the fun of fishing is biting that fish. So if I got to back my drag off a couple clicks, not necessarily a big deal. You know, this time of year, you're not really fishing in any kind of timber structure or anything or weeds like that. You know, you're more around flats and edges and edges of rock or whatever. So at 6 pound, I don't see there's a problem with that. And I did have a bunch of 8 pound, and I just noticed some of those days, even in some wind, I wasn't getting quite the distance with an 8 pound, with the 8 pound line versus a 6 pound. So I pretty much strictly just run a 6 pound test line.
That makes a ton of sense, man. I like that. Like, I like those descriptions. Like, you know, like, I feel like it adds a ton to it because, yeah, I mean, everybody in every different situation, every walk of life is going to have a different reason why they like, you know, even if you like the same line, even if you meet somebody at a sports show somewhere and they say, yeah, I love that 6 pound suffix advanced. But they might have a more equally as interesting but different type of story to get to that point. I think that stuff is, you know, stuff that people relate to. It's also kind of where a lot of eyes get opened up. It's like, oh man, I haven't considered casting distance forever. Like, I choose my line for this reason, and casting distance is, well, I got to start thinking that. You know, it kind of opens up, it just opens things up again. I think that those things are super interesting. But along those same lines, pitching light jigs with light mono, where do you stand when it comes to rod and reel preferences?
That's changed and evolved over the years. I used to try to get by with smaller reels. You know, I'm going to say 1500, 2000 size, and, you know, 6'6", 6'10s. And now I would say like a short rod for me would be a 6'10", and I'll have them all the way up to 7'6". And my real preference has been a 2,500 to a 3,000. That bigger spool allows a further cast also.
There's a lot of 3,000 size reels, and there's a lot of guys with 4,000 size reels, you know, in the walleye world. And that's like, that almost isn't even in a lot of people's vocabulary, but guys that fish a lot, that's like such a common thing. And gear has gotten so good anymore as far as being light
it's a lot of it's changed. And I never used to be the kind of guy that would look at some of that stuff, but I'm looking at, you know, reel size and gear ratios and then the weight versus, you know, a 3,000 or 2,500 or 4,000 size reel. Yeah, everybody's getting a lot more technique specific.
Do you ever get out after dark? Is that something that is maybe like something being kept a secret, or is that been tried and maybe just not anything better than anything else, or what? Where does the, you know, after dark bite sort of come into play for spring walleyes in South Dakota?
Honestly, it's pretty good. I don't get out and do it as much as I used to. So before, long story short, before I was a full time fishing guide, I worked overnights. So my internal clock was geared to be up, you know, until 6 o'clock in the morning. So I used to night fish all the time. And I would say, I mean, it's a different thing, different. It's harder, right? Night fishing's tougher. You can't see really what's going on. But the first handful of walleyes that I ever caught over 28 inches came after dark. And I mean, I did it as much as I could. Now, life doesn't allow me to do it. I don't know if I've done it as much or been out the last couple of years after dark. But, no, it's definitely a good thing. And it's something that I would say gets overlooked a little bit. But we also live in a good area where we can catch them during the day.
Yeah.
So a lot of guys are content like that. But if somebody was just out kind of hunting for big fish, that nighttime is kind of a special time to be out. I used to night fish more than I fished during the day there for a good period of my life.
That's awesome.
High school. I mean, I had back in the day there, I had a little red Lund S16 with the 25 horse Johnson. I didn't even have, I had a false floor in the boat, but it had the benches in it, right? Like a 42-pound thrust Minn Kota. And I mean, if you wanted a spot lock, you had to use an anchor back then.
Yeah.
I mean, it was completely different. But yeah, we did a ton of night fishing back then. And I did a lot by myself. My dad used to do it with me too sometimes. But yeah, we had a lot of fun, a lot of good nights. It lasted, you know, for a while throughout the season too, not just the springtime, but into June sometimes. So it's definitely something that gets overlooked, I think, in the Dakotas. I know guys over in, you know, Wisconsin and maybe a little bit in Minnesota, they do a little bit more of that night fishing. But like I said, our fishing's pretty good here through the day, where I think a lot of guys are content where they don't feel like they need to stay out after dark, but the fish don't biting because the people leave.
Yeah, if anything, when it's quieter. Like a really good body of water that's good for a reason and kind of maybe becomes a little bit of a, you know, there's a lot of fishing pressure. It kind of becomes a community hole. Usually there's a reason for it. Usually the fishing's good enough, you know, and it kind of brings the people in. If you want to separate yourself, take a peek at the night fishing opportunity. There might be something there where if you can make it work, you can kind of get yourself geared up for it. Everybody leaves. Might open up some stuff.
Yeah, and I think today it'd probably be easier and better than it's ever been. I mean, a lot of these boats are coming with nice LED light strips in them.
Oh, and, yeah.
You know, your trolling motors have spot lock right on them, or guys have talons or power poles or whatever it may be. There's definitely some stuff that is available that wasn't.
Yeah, dude, if you're just looking to mix it up, or have a heck of a fishing experience on your home body of water that might almost make it feel kind of exotic, as if you're going somewhere else. It's like fish your own home lake after dark if you never have, and it'll just feel like a whole different thing.
I would say that almost probably made me a better jig fisherman with all the time I spent fishing at night. Your spidey senses are a little bit more on edge, right? So if you can't feel your jig during the day, go out at night and without being able to see, I think you can almost feel everything better. I do think that probably made me a better jig fisherman, was just not being able to see your line, or because I was always kind of fussy about having lights on in the boat or anything, because, you know, typically this time of year the water's clear, so I didn't want to
spook fish.
Yeah, so I'd have a headlamp on, but I would only turn it on when I caught a fish or had on a fish. And, you know, not being able to see that stuff kind of made a guy's feel, you know, you could feel everything better, right? Not being able to see what it was doing.
Absolutely.
Kind of forget about that stuff.
Yeah.
Something we don't talk about much with other people or on podcasts is you know, being able to do that kind of stuff. And I,
yeah. Sometimes like the fun factor is like the whole thing, like where you're completely looking for the adventure. Maybe night fishing isn't even the best application. Maybe it's not, you know, maybe pitching a jig or a jerkbait after dark isn't the necessarily the best application. You probably should be fishing during the day or sunrise or sunset. But just to have the experience of it and to do it for like what you just said, you have no idea what you might take away from it, the level of confidence you might have then the next day when the lights do turn on. There's, you're going to be connecting dots that you weren't really maybe and at all aware of, because we're so comfortable with high vis line during the day and, you know, lining your cast up with the wind or whatever. And, you know, just all the things you do during the day, and at night, the wind dies down. It's quiet. You can hear the jig hitting the water 80 feet out. And, you know, you're just, yeah, you just kind of become in tune to things. So it isn't even nearly about being the best application or catching the most fish or even the biggest fish, even though there's an argument to be made for those things after dark at times. But just to have more young people having these experiences, you know, to that, it's kind of fun to kind of reminisce about it and talk to you. You did a bunch of it. I think it's just cool. And yeah, you kind of reach a phase or sort of a season in your life where it's kind of over. It's like you got too many things on the priority list to be staying up till 2 a.m. trying to catch 2 fish, you know, and you're probably not guiding. It's like a personal thing. It's like, you know, there's too many things going on at this point in time in life. It's not going to happen at near the frequency, but you already did it and it's cool.
The thing about fishing for me is just being able to learn and adapt and keep learning and adapting. And I mean, there's so much great information out there, but from everybody. And I'm just a normal guy that turned it into a career somehow, but I still don't feel like I'm in that. I feel like I'm still learning and figuring things out, because, I mean, we can talk about spring walleyes and how I would do this and that, but every day's different, and you have to just kind of take it and make it your own. You know, taking this little bit of information from somebody and, you know, trying to put yourself in that situation or finding that, but finding your own niche too. You know what I mean?
100%, dude. That's it, man. That's the love of the game. 100%. It's like, if I can take one thing from you and one thing from somebody else, but when I'm out on the water, you know, it's like, you got to be able to make something happen. It's not going to be 100% to a T exactly the way Marcus described it. Maybe it will some days, but yep. You got to be prepared for, you know, you got to be able to kind of have that open mind and be ready to kind of make it your own. Like you said, yeah. And having more time on the water, you kind of get that a lot easier. But are you going to be on the tournament trail again this year?
Yeah, I'm going to get out and fish some tournaments. I have a young family right now, so it's hard to fish everything, but I still get to do my fair share. So I know we're going to fish that Casino Cup series again. I'm toying with the idea of fishing the NWT out at Oahe. And then we got some different league stuff around South Dakota that we jumped into last year that I think we might fish again this year. So I'll get my fair share of doing some tournaments here, but I am getting excited and looking forward to that stuff here. I know I've been kind of twiddling around the garage here this last week, going through all the tackle and ordering everything and getting ready for it.
Are you just that competitive of a guy that you got to go seek out some like level of competition for yourself, or is it your desire to fish different places and just kind of, you know, be, you know, experiencing new types of adventures? I'm just sort of curious with how that tournament stuff sort of comes to play, because man, you live in you're surrounded by millions upon millions of walleyes, but yet you still travel to fish, you know, the casino stuff. And I'm not saying it ain't fun. I'm with you all the way on this, but I'm just sort of curious how you would describe that for yourself.
I do have a little bit of a competitive side. You know, I get enjoyment out of guiding and taking people fishing and showing them something, teaching them something, or even if they're not learning and they're just catching and having a fun. I do get a good kick out of that. But it's another thing that I don't really get in my job, you know, there's, you know, I mean, there's obviously competition between other guides and different things, but the competitive side of things is one of those ways where, I don't know, I don't want to brag or anything, but I feel good about it when we do good. And I feel like I learn and expand my knowledge by going out and fishing in conditions that you wouldn't maybe necessarily go, or at different times of the year that you wouldn't go. But it's also, yeah, it's learning, trying new things. And I do like fishing different places too. I mean, I live, in my opinion, in one of the best areas that a fisherman can live. But some days it gets a little monotonous. So I got to mix it up here and there and go and try something else. And I've met so many great people over the years by doing it too. I mean, there's a ton of camaraderie between everybody, and even through the competition, I've met a lot of great friends doing this too. So I look forward to seeing them every year and trying something different. You know, I mean, I always wanted to make my living fishing somehow, and you know, before the guiding, I did enjoy fishing tournaments, and I thought that'd be the coolest job ever. And it's not probably the easiest job to get into, so guiding's the next best thing, and fishing some of these local or regional things kind of lets me, you know, my competitive appetite, you know, kind of fills that for me a little bit.
Yeah, man. Do you have a favorite, like, location, if you look at the schedule, like, going into this year?
They're all good. I mean, we go and we fish Oahe, which, you know, everybody's heard about it, the big fish in the system right now. I mean, it is truly a special place, and it is, I've had a couple of my best days fishing, just pre-fishing out there, you know?
Yeah.
It's a great place to fish. I mean, I love getting up to Devil's Lake too. It's a similar situation to what I live in, but it's all together in a bigger lake, so it is kind of fun to just, you can fish this corner of the lake like this, or you can drive to the east side and fish like that or whatever. And in Sakakawea, I mean, that's a cool reservoir too, with a, I don't know, an abundance of smelt, with you know, fishing a little bit different, or going in the hook and fishing some different tactics. I mean, they're all great. I don't have any body of water that I hate, honestly.
Yeah.
They're all fun. I mean, no matter where I go, everybody's got some good fishing at certain times of the year or different places. And it's fun just to experience, you know, what everybody else has got too.
That's all good stuff, man. Well, I love it. Well, Marcus, I appreciate you being able to do this. This is, you know, on pretty short notice too, and I really appreciate that, but timely. I'm pumped that you're going to be getting a boat ready to go out on the water here shortly in the next few days, Lord willing. And so it's cool that we can kind of talk to you when you're on the cusp of it, because the vibes are always elite. And I wish you good luck. All right, dude. Well, safe travels. Get on the water, man. And we'll be talking to you.
All right. Thank you.